Chapter 29, The Update Team. The next person I got on the Weekend Update team was Laura Jo Hoekstra, whose talent was being wasted as a writer's assistant. She was always the funniest girl in the room and could keep up with the big boys, even Sandler, who loved her. Her taste in comedy was nonpareil, and I convinced her to be the producer of the segment. I loved Ian Maxtone Graham and wanted him exclusively on Update, but he was too important to the show and would have to split his time between my work and the sketches. He served as a consultant along with Steve Luckner, who always submitted highly eccentric jokes. From the outset, Lauren let me know that I could make Update into anything I wanted it to be, but that I would always have to deliver the jokes completely unarmed. Laurie Jo, Downey, and I discussed it. Before me, the Weekend Update staff had always been made up of just the host and one writer. But that was because the host would write jokes every week. I had a completely different style. I would write roughly 1 to 2 jokes every 2 years and spend most of my time practicing reading giant cue cards 2 feet in front of my face. Laurie Jo then suggested we hire outside writers so that Weekend Update would have a completely different flavor from the rest of SNL. She suggested Ross Abrash, a veteran comedy scribe who was the best in the business and the man who taught me what the word scribe means. And Frank Sebastiano, a UPS driver, just like that fat guy on TV with the bitchy wife. Frank had been sending in 200 jokes a week on brown paper bags, just trying to land a job. The jokes were so good that we hired him. The team was in place. I'll never forget our first meeting. Jim Downey explained that Sandler had successfully remade SNL with his rock star persona. He thought we should follow Sandler's lead and develop Weekend Update with a punk sensibility, and cited The Clash as our muse. Everyone in the room agreed with Jim. Everyone but me. Listen here, Jim. One of the most important qualities for a performer to have is the ability to know his own limitations. I've never been a good singer. I'm the guy in front of the camera, and I'm going to have to nix that one. Jim explained that he meant the show should echo the ethos of punk rock, where everything but the essence of the music was stripped away. It really had nothing to do with singing. But I put my foot down and addressed the whole room. I got 2 words for all of you, and if you want to keep your jobs, you'll listen. No singing! Jim just sighed. But I knew I'd been heard. Never once in my 3 years as Update anchor was a singing joke submitted. Laurie Jo agreed with Jim that jokes should be stripped of any cleverness, play on words, or innuendo. Jokes should never elicit applause, Laurie Jo insisted. A joke should catch people by surprise. It should never pander. Applause is voluntary, but laughter is involuntary. Laurie Jo is sure smart, and the whole room agreed, and I pretended to. But my mind was far away, on a meeting I had set up for later that afternoon with Wally Ferriston, the cue card guy. No offense to our team, but I knew that Wally and I were the key players. Ian Maxtone Graham spoke next. He said he loved the jokes that Frank Sebastiano was submitting, where the punchlines were preposterously blunt. I also loved those punchlines and said as much. The directness really made me laugh. Ross Abrash wrote short, to-the-point jokes. There was never an ounce of fat in a joke written by Ross. Frank thought of new ways to tell jokes. Don't I know it? Or so the Germans would have us believe. Note to self. Or, as Ted Kennedy calls it, Thursday. Together, they are the most copied joke writers of their generation. Exactly, said Downey. That's what I was getting at when I said the segment should have a punk feel. This time I smashed my hand down hard on the desk. I said no singing, goddammit! Jim sighed again. He was starting to realize that his dream of putting me on set with an electric guitar, singing and spitting on the audience, was not going to fly, so he decided to give up. Steve Luckner had submitted an early joke. Lyle Lovett and Julia Roberts are getting divorced. Insiders say the trouble began because he was Lyle Lovett and she was Julia Roberts. I sure loved that joke. I'd never heard a joke where the premise and the punchline were so close. Exactly, said Downey. That's what I was getting at when I... But I glowered at him and he cast his eyes down. If he wanted to listen to his Sex Pistol records, he could do it at home. But Downey felt he should warn me that the type of comedy we were writing wasn't traditional, and I couldn't expect to get wall-to-wall laughs. This was avant-garde stuff. I didn't tell him at the time, but if not getting laughs was avant-garde, I'd been avant-garde week in and week out in stand-up clubs across the country. Jim told me I had to think up a line to introduce the segment every week. The two best anchors were Dennis Miller, who opened the segment with, "I'm Dennis Miller and what can I tell you?" and Chevy Chase, who opened with, "I'm Chevy Chase and you're not." I suggested, "I'm Norm MacDonald and here's a string of jokes." The group initially seemed amused, but ultimately hated it. I said, "I'm Norm MacDonald and this is the fake news." No one liked this at all. The news was real, I was told. The newscast itself was fake, but all the news within the segment was real. I disagreed vehemently. "Are you telling me that the first parts of these jokes are things that really happened?" "Yes," said Ross Abrash. "We always start with a real story from the news, not a fake one. And then we make up the last part, or the punchline, which is a comment on the first real part, the setup." "Well, I say you're a liar. You just make up the first part, and then it's easy to think of a funny second part." "No," Ross insisted. "I can assure you every setup we do comes from the real news. So saying this is the fake news makes no sense, and it makes you look like an idiot." "Well, I guess we'll just have to agree to disagree," I said. "No," said Ross. "I will not agree to disagree. I will only disagree." I didn't know that was allowed, so I looked around the room. "Well, we've heard from Ross. Is anyone here in this room willing to agree to disagree with me?" Not a single soul agreed to disagree with me. However, everyone was in solidarity when it came to simply and violently disagreeing with me. Long after I left the segment, the term fake news became the ordinary way to describe what was done on SNL, as well as The Daily Show and The Colbert Report. So who's the idiot now? People often ask how many jokes I contributed to Weekend Update. The answer can be a whole bunch or one, depending on how you look at it. I pitched it during that first meeting. David Hasselhoff is a major recording star in Germany, where his two shows, Baywatch and Knight Rider, are huge hits, which all goes to prove my theory. Germans love David Hasselhoff. No one laughed. Jim said, "You can do it, Norm, but non sequiturs have to be done often to have any chance to work." "Okay, Professor," I sneered. "What's a non sequitur?" "It's a joke that makes no sense. It's structured like a joke, but has no content." Jim was really starting to get on my nerves. That was no non sequitur. It was a real joke. The meeting had held such promise, but it was turning bad quickly, and I sensed that two camps were forming, the camp I was in and the camp everyone else was in. I knew where I was needed. I quickly excused myself and went to meet with Wally Ferriston to discuss the size of the cue cards. The new incarnation of Weekend Update premiered in the fall of 1994 and was an instant hit. The New York Times hailed it punk rock comedy, which is what I had been intending for them to notice from the beginning. Frank and Ross wrote all day, every day, on Update, and by week's end they had generated maybe 2,000 jokes. We'd cut it down to 30 for dress and to about a dozen for air. By that time, the jokes would be bulletproof, exactly like one of those punk rock songs. We also filled the time with features, of course, and it was so fun to have Sandler do his Hanukkah song or Farley do anything at all, really. Later, guys like Jim Brewer and Colin Quinn came along and were perfect for features because they came from stand-up and knew how to perform directly into camera. and I got to sit right beside them and watch. And when the camera wasn't on me, I could swig warm bourbon from a flask. I knew Weekend Update was becoming popular because my influence at the show was beginning to build. I was a natural at reading cue cards that were held 2 feet from my face. I noticed that my power on the show was directly related to the size of the cue cards. I kept demanding larger and larger cue cards until mine were over 4 times as big as any other cast member's. I even negotiated for Wally to get his own personal trainer who would work with him during the week, since the weight of the giant cue cards was beginning to prove too much for him. We were having a great time at Weekend Update until the grumbling began. I had heard things, but I just chalked it up to general grumbling. But it was not. It was grumbling that was specific to Weekend Update, and specific to me. But I never worried. Weekend Update was the funniest it had ever been. And when you are that funny, you can be sure that you will not be fired.